This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
And we've got one of the, we got the Jacob Fatu of Sacramento with us right now, Matt George of ABC 10.
I missed on Kings. They said that on the broadcast last night, the worst slums of Sacramento.
No, that was from weeks ago. That was on a SmackDown episode. That was probably a month or so ago. Yeah. Where Corey had said Solo plucked Jacob Fatu from the worst slums of Sacramento.
Yeah, we'll claim him. Fatu can be a Sacramento boy. We'll take him.
Yeah, so we've decided to work that into our show as much as possible.
What is the worst slums of Sacramento?
That's well, I've asked many people that question.
I don't think we're going to offend anybody.
No, I mean, we found out that I was about to say South Sac. We found out Stephen Brown is from South Sac. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Stephen Brown when. You know, 5'8", 165, going down Mac Road. You know,
wow. All right, okay. Well, I don't know. He said he worked in the Bay Area. He's got tickets to Stockton Kings. I thought maybe my man was living somewhere else.
Russ Dog 3-1. Come on, man. Don't do that,
Matt. Don't do that, Matt. Convey some of your excitement that you shared on the Locked On Kings podcast after watching one half of. What felt like true Sacramento Kings basketball last night.
Well, let's start with the fact that DeMar DeRozan was literally perfect.
Yes.
Like literally perfect. Yeah. He went 6 of 6, 2 of 2 from the line, blocked a shot. The guy that can't play defense blocked a shot. Also had, I think, an assist. He was perfect. And I think even an element of it that goes even further beyond that is he was perfect while the rest of the Sacramento Kings offense was fluid. And the fact that Mike shared with us before the game, I'm not drawing up anything for anybody. Like this is almost schoolyard. Like we have, that doesn't mean the Kings don't run sets because DHO, that's a set, but that's a fluid set that they can run throughout their motion, right? The Kings have been working on this 5-out offense where they're spread out as much as possible and got different guys move and read and react depending upon where the ball is and what the defense is doing. So that's the free flowing offense that they've been working on. But Mike didn't take any time to draw up, hey, DeMar, you're going to get the ball here. Or De'Aaron, you're going to get the ball here. Or Keegan, you're going to get the ball. It was just that the Kings starting five played together for the first time, and it looked like they've been playing together for years. And for 4 out of the 5 guys, that's true. But the fifth guy, the new guy that you're plugging in, looked better than anybody else. I mean, that's pretty exciting to me. The fact that the starters in that first half scored 47 points, shot like 62% or something like that, 21 of 31 from the field overall. And everybody ate. DeMar tied for the fewest shot attempts out of the core five. take Keon Ellis out, put Malik Monk in. Malik had seven. Keegan also had six, or maybe he had seven. Domas had six, one of the two of those. And De'Aaron had 10. So everybody got their shots. DeMar didn't steal any shots from anybody. DeMar didn't negatively impact the shot totals and development of Keegan Murray by being out there on the floor with him. It was just adding another weapon to an already very volatile and versatile offense that the Warriors had no answer for, because I don't think anybody is going to have any answer for it. It's going to be just hope they miss shots. Like, that's going to be how you defend the Kings. Hope they miss, because somebody's going to be open at some point.
I'm with you 100%, Matt. Matt talking that talk right now. And forgive me if you already said this, but the thing about, you know, the offense last night is nothing looked forced. You know, everything was just natural, fluid. This is what DeMar does. DeMar will get the ball either by itself or on a dribble handoff, take one, two dribbles, get to the nail, pull up, it's a bucket. Like, he's going to do that for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? That's just what he does. Keegan was able to get in where he fit in. Sabonis, he was orchestrating things. Fox, he had 10 field goal attempts, but it really felt like he was coasting. You know, it didn't feel like he was forcing anything. It all looked natural. And that's the thing that really gets me excited. You combine that with the fact that they didn't even hit three-pointers last night. They still have that aspect of the offense to unlock. I said earlier, it's a top five offense in the game this year. I'm going to stake my claim to that. This is a top five offense in basketball this year.
Yeah, Casey, I'm glad you brought up the three-point shooting. I thought last night's like post-game press conferences was actually one of the best press conferences overall that the Kings organization had. And it's because of Keegan and De'Aaron pointing out two separate things. One of them was Keegan pointed out exactly what you talked about. The offense played very fluid, and the Kings scored 60 some odd points and led at halftime, and they had four made threes. Like, we know this team is way better from 3-point range than that. So imagine how deadly the Kings were inside the arc. Now you add a halfway decent 3-point shooting percentage on top of that, because I think they're like 4 of 13 or something like that. So it wasn't good. They shoot 38% or 40% as a team in that first half. The Kings are up by 10 minimum. Right. So the offense looked that good, and it can be even better. That's what's exciting, number one. And then I asked De'Aaron, because I put out that clip that Warriors fans are crying over right now, which is Keegan Murray locking down Steph Curry for that possession, which was an awesome possession. And I asked,
lock him down to five titles.
Might as well have been the most insecure people anyway. And like, the Kings threw Keegan, De'Aaron and Keegan all at Steph in one half. Three completely different guys that give you completely different looks. And I asked De'Aaron about that. Like, you don't stop Steph Curry, right? You just hope to throw things at him and change it up on him and hope that it works. And De'Aaron took the question, or took the answer, in a completely different direction. He basically said, he was like, we believe we have we have good individual defenders on this team, but we can't call ourselves a good defensive team if we're not playing good team defense. So Fox takes accountability immediately for the fact that the Sacramento Kings gave up far too many threes last night. The Warriors ended with 28, and yes, the starters didn't play the second half, but the Warriors had like 15 threes at halftime and were shooting over 50% from 3-point range at halftime. So the starters didn't do their job either. So I thought it was really eye-opening, and it was really refreshing to hear De'Aaron go, yeah, we had good individual defensive moments against Steph Curry, but as a team, we weren't good. We know we need to be better than that, and we can't call ourselves good defensively as individuals until our team plays good defense.
You brought up the 3-point shooting on the game. Obviously, we're focused on the first half. On the game, the Kings shot 25.9%. On the game, Matt, they gave up 53.8%. Couple of questions there. We're going to go one at a time because I'm going to be a good journalist. You talked about how good that they were inside the arc, the mid-range game. We saw Domas and DeMar running a two-man game together that made them both look like $1 million.
Right.
But do you think that inside the arc game is something that they might lean on a little bit more than they did last year? Or do you think as this thing starts to progress, probably as soon as tomorrow night, we see a little bit more of a balance between the two and the three, which the Kings obviously shot very well last year?
I think we'll definitely see the Kings lean on it more because they have one of the best weapons in that range now in the league. And that's something that outside of De'Aaron Fox, they did not have last season. So the Kings were so reliant on the three-point shot or scoring at the rim last season. The mid-range was basically a void unless it was De'Aaron Fox. And we know De'Aaron Fox took a step back from 2 years ago when he won Clutch Player of the Year, right? He was a mid-range merchant. He was killing it from putting the ball on the floor, getting to that elbow, rise up. It was unguardable. He went away from that a little bit last season. I don't know if that's because the defense adjusted to him. I don't know if that's because he was shooting so well from three-point range, or he was tired of putting the ball on the ground and getting whacked every single time he went inside the three-point arc. So now the Kings can rely on the mid-range. And it, what it to me, D'Lo, it becomes like less of a boom or doom or risk-reward or whatever the case may be. Like the Kings can have a poor three-point shooting night, but if they are executing in other areas offensively, they're not going to fall drastically behind. I think it dawned on me at one point, the Warriors in the fourth quarter had 27 threes to the Kings 7. That means they had a 60-point advantage from beyond the arc. Like if you were to tell me that, I would have tell you the Kings were down by 25 plus. Kings were only down by 11. The reason for that, you start looking through, it's like, okay, what's different? What's different? Yes, it's DeMar DeRozan's shooting in the first half for sure. But you look at one of the new staples of the Kings offense, and it's offensive rebounding. The Kings have 8 offensive rebounds for 16 second chance points. That's what's keeping you in the game. So there are new elements to this team that I believe Sacramento will have games where they're putting up 40 plus threes because they have too many weapons on this team. And I think those guys are going to get so many open shots on the perimeter because of DeMar and Domas and De'Aaron. And they're going to have to take him. And Mike will get mad at you if you literally don't take an open three. But if those shots aren't falling, the Kings have different elements in place now to where they can withstand that, unlike before.
Yeah. What did you think about Domas and the way he played out there and him taking some mid-range jumper? We even talk about he had a couple, one in transition off the bounce. Like, what do you think about that? And what does that do for this team if he's not only willing to take that shot, but somewhat consistent with hitting that shot?
If you were to ask my comment section on Locked On Kings, that was the play of the game when Domas pulled up off the bounce and made that midi. And I think everybody in the arena was excited by it. Like, yeah. And he didn't take a three last night, so he didn't shoot the three ball. That's because he was primarily playing inside the arc with the DHO game with DeMar. And this is one of the reasons why I will obnoxiously talk you know what about Sabonis to the end of the earth and brag for him, because the guy is so freaking humble. You ask him about his two-man game with DeMar and he says, oh, my job's easy. DeMar makes my job easy. DeMar's never played with a big that can do what Domantas Sabonis does. And the fact that, like, I didn't even catch it, guys, when I was initially shooting it, but I posted DeMar scored like 3 buckets in the first like 5 minutes of the game. I recorded all 3 of them. I cut them all together, posted it for ABC10, and I captioned it like DeMar DeRozan is a certified bucket or something like that. Then I went back and watched it, and I realized all 3 of those shots came off of action with Domas right out of the gate. Like, the fact that DeMar can even get those good of looks because of the two-man game that he's playing with Domantas Sabonis. Yeah, DeMar is very, very good. But Domas is such a difference maker with everybody that he plays with. And it's something that, unless he's getting the assist on the DHO, it's something that does not show up in a box score. It's something that casual basketball fans or people that simply aren't watching take for granted or don't understand or don't appreciate. But when you watch with Domas, and more importantly, talk to the people that play with Domas, they tell you, this is who this guy is. This guy gets me better shots than I've ever had in my career just by playing with him. Mm-hmm. That is a tremendous asset to have that you're not going to find in numbers and in analytics. All right.
Well, get it off your chest, man.
Don't talk bad about my boy Domas. I haven't watched Starting Five yet, though. I got to watch it. I heard my boy Kevin.
I watched all 10 episodes yesterday, Matt. I strongly encourage it. Yes, I did.
You're insane. I heard Kevin John made it a couple of times.
Well, actually, not to spoil it, you did too. I think Kevin John made it in a visual component. You made it in an audio component.
Uh-oh. What did I say?
No, I think it was all excitement around the
shocking
Kings Warriors. I can't remember if it was the play-in game or if it was a recap of the playoff series, because they do a little bit of that. But yeah, your voice definitely made it, and Kevin John's handsome face definitely.
Netflix's Matt George.
That's a fact.
I'm waiting for my check.
Oh, it's on the way, Matt.
Just, oh well.
Just, Just keep waiting for it, buddy. What was the one thing regarding DeMar and DeMar alone that you were most excited about? Or most excited is the wrong word, because you'd be excited about the whole thing. Encouraged about with the way that he played?
I think it was just, it was a, like an affirmation of two things in particular. Number one was that everybody's been saying DeMar can fit seamlessly into this offense, and he did, at least in a small sample size. And to the kind of proof of the things that I've been saying to counteract the kind of lazy commentary that we've seen this offseason, negative commentary about DeRozan not taking shots away from anybody. Like, there's nothing about the way DeMar DeRozan played last night that suggests that anybody's going to be sacrificing for him, or that they're going to be hurt in any kind of way because he's playing with them. And sure, we need to see it more. Some people are going to claim it's only one game. I need to see more of it. But these people should just watch DeMar DeRozan's entire career, regardless of where he's gone, and recognize, even with being the top guy, which he's not the top guy here in Sacramento, but even with being the top guy, he was consistently getting his teammates involved, and he wasn't a one-trick pony and one-man show. So seeing that play out in person and confirming those beliefs and feelings that I had about DeMar and this team, that was pretty fun.
What did you think about De'Aaron Fox's play? Like, as you kind of touched on a little bit, he shot, I think, the most shots on the team with 10 shots, mm-hmm. at 11 points. But it didn't feel aggressive. Like, it didn't, I shouldn't say aggressive, like it didn't feel aggressive in a negative way, but it just didn't feel like he was forcing it. It felt like he was letting the game come naturally. And I thought he looked good out there. What'd you think about Fox in this, with the offense, with so many different options?
Again, I think it's a glimpse of De'Aaron Fox can coast. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Some people think coasting is, and to some extent, like, coasting on defense is what I think about what, like, James Harden does, right? Like, he just is there, right? And he saves all his energy for offense. That's not what De'Aaron Fox does. When I say coast, I mean, like, De'Aaron plays well, and we just expect him to play well. And he puts up, how many points did he have last night? Like 10 or 11 or something like that? 5 of 10 from the field or something? Like, okay. Like, De'Aaron did not even remotely close to come at any point take over or have a massive possession where it was like, oh, De'Aaron's taking over this moment. He didn't.
De'Aaron did kind of look like he was kicking it last night.
And good for him. Like, yeah. He's trying to figure out how to implement everybody. And like, I'm still of the belief that De'Aaron Fox has to average, like, close to, if not 30 points per game to have a shot at winning or making an all-NBA team again and making him eligible for the Supermax. And I do believe that's important to him. Of course, team success matters too. But I think De'Aaron also recognizes that, man, it's not all on my back, and I can still get mine by making an appearance every other possession or every two or three possessions being the one to attack. Mm-hmm. But De'Aaron just being out there impacts all four of those other guys in such a tremendous way, to where I can't help on DeMar because I got to worry about where De'Aaron is. Now that I know De'Aaron Fox is capable of shooting 36, 37% from 3-point range and even better on some nights, I got to keep an eye. I can't help. Sorry, man. I got to stick to De'Aaron because even if I stick to De'Aaron, he can still blow past me if he wants to. Yeah. So De'Aaron just being out there, there's going to be moments where De'Aaron absolutely takes over and everybody just gets out of his way. But on nights like last night where, okay, DeMar's cooking early on, I'll get my shots. I'll get my moments. But I don't have to be the give me the ball and get the hell out of the way, De'Aaron, that the Kings needed in the fourth quarter a couple of years ago and last season.
I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted here. I guess Shams just starts right away on ESPN.
Like, yeah, I saw that this morning too.
Shams, like, get to work, pal.
Yep. And this is what I told Chris Haynes. Shams was on Get Up this morning.
Shams is on SportsCenter right now.
That's what I'm saying. Think about what time that is. That, like, when you work at ESPN, you work there all damn day.
Yeah.
And that's what Shams is doing. So we've glowed about this offense here, Matt. What about on the defensive side of the ball? We talked about the way that the Kings shot the three-point shot. What we didn't talk about was the way that the Golden State Warriors shot the three-point shot. And when we got into the discussion about this game, you know, we stuck with the positive because there was a lot of positive takeaway, particularly the fact the Warriors hit 15 threes in the first half and the Kings still had the lead despite only hitting four. Now, if you're taking a different approach to that same number, Matt, the Kings hit the Warriors hit 15 threes in the first half. They wound up finishing, I think, with 28. That's kind of an extension of an issue that we saw last year. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, to steal a line from Mike and Tony.
Oh, it's a big deal. It's 100% a big deal. Now, I would first off like to preface by saying, hey, great game, Buddy Hield. Great game, Golden State Warriors. I'm glad you got that out of your system in the preseason when it doesn't matter. Shout out you guys. Hopefully that doesn't carry into the regular season itself. Buddy looked fantastic last night, by the way. That being said, yes, it's a concern for the Kings because defensively that was their primary issue last season. And Mike pointed it out. And I know I've said it on the show a million times, I feel like. If the Kings had a league average, we're talking.
You sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Middle of the pack, three-point defense last year, they would have been a top 10 defense. Like, that's how bad their three-point defense was. And the first glimpse we get, they get torched from the perimeter. Now, yes, everybody was getting theirs on the Warriors last night, and good for them. Like, everybody had the hot hand. It was one of those infectious nights where one guy makes it, everybody makes it. And we've seen the Kings have those nights before, too. But you can't just chalk it up to, oh, the Warriors were just hitting shots. No, you can't. And what I thought was interesting was one of the staples of the Kings training camp is defend physically without fouling. Well, the Kings did a good job not fouling last night. The Warriors only took, I think, 13 free throws. Kings had 17 team fouls. You absolutely live with that. But what Mike Brown said after the game was, our perimeter defense was bad because they weren't feeling us, right? Everybody was coming into the game and hitting shots because they felt like they were getting as open of looks as they were getting in warmups or they were getting in training camp walkthroughs, right? The Kings' physicality is not just refusing to move if a guy drives into you. It's making a perimeter player feel you and not feel comfortable that they're going to have enough space to get a shot off the way that they want it. And the Kings didn't do a good enough job of that, top to bottom, right, throughout the entire game. So that's for sure a concern that I expect the Kings to work on and to look different. Mm-hmm. Even if the Kings foul three-point shooters two or three times on Friday in their rematch with Golden State, I'll honestly take that because now is the time to figure out how you can close out aggressively, the high-five closeouts that Mike Brown and Luke Louts talk so much about. Do that. You can foul a guy in the preseason and figure it out. I'd rather see that than the Ole defense that the Kings were playing on the perimeter.
So a couple of things there, right? Like, number one, I do agree with you. Like, that's something that you want to emphasize. You want to be better at defending the three. It took a situation where, like, securing the Bagley and the Matthews Chatty House, he said, I agree with you, Matt. Team hit 15 threes in the first half against the starters, talking about the Warriors, and they were still losing. You know what I mean? Like, you with this team, the way they're constructed this year, is going to be somebody could have a record number of threes, and it's not necessarily the end of the world. The other thing about that, too, is you take on a team like the Golden State Warriors, where they're a little bit of an anomaly. They, in some ways, only shoot the three. At least that's what it looks like it's going to be this year. That's going to be their opportunity to score, is shooting the three and really spreading the floor out. And I think they were talking about, Looney was talking about, he was, you know, been working on his three. So it was almost the perfect storm. A Kings team that isn't where they're going to be, hopefully, defending the threes, going up against a team that almost exclusively just shoots threes and are good at getting those open looks and understand how to get those open looks, and they knocked them down. So D'Lo was asking me earlier in the day about, you know, how I felt about it, and I said, I'm going to give it some time before, you know, I'm concerned about it, or, you know, I look at it as the same problem as last year, because I want to see them against a couple of different types of teams and see how their three-point defense is at that point.
Well, being concerned and panicking are two very different things. True. And I don't think there's any reason to panic for the Sacramento Kings at any point. Look, this what's the cliche? Rome wasn't built in a day, right? Like, we expected this team with this offensively gifted roster to look good offensively and still struggle defensively. Hey, guess what we got the first game? That's what we got. So sometimes the cover of the book kind of makes sense. But I hear what you're saying totally, KC. I will say this, though. For the Kings, I'm not concerned about what type of team or what any other team is doing. Mm-hmm. What I'm concerned about from the Sacramento Kings standpoint is, you know, this is a weakness. You've told us you're emphasizing fixing it and correcting it in training camp. And the first glimpse we got against another team, regardless of that team takes 100 threes a game or takes no threes, the first glimpse we got was against what you say you want to do. Mm-hmm. So that was my takeaway from that. The Kings, if they take on teams, and the Warriors are not going to be the only team that likes to get up a lot of threes, if the Kings take on those teams, they can't just tip their cap, unless these guys are making ridiculous fadeaway contested jumpers and everything's just going in. And it's a lot easier to tip your cap when they make a tough shot than when they make a bunch of open shots.
Right.
So the Kings, they're going to play the Warriors four times this year. They're going to play teams that like to put up the three a lot. The Kings can't just go, well, that's their offense. Oh, well, that's how we can't deal with it. And I know you're not saying that, Casey. I want the Kings to approach every game the same way of, it doesn't matter who we're playing and how they want to play. This is what we need to correct. This is what's important for us to fix. And we're going to address that in this game. That's what I wanted to see last night. And that's what I'm looking for on Friday.
Yeah. So what do you think tomorrow looks like? Like, Kenny and I were trying to speculate on this a little bit about, you know, this preseason and the way that it's kind of laid out as they play every other game from now until Tuesday. And I think Mike addressed this today. Some members of the Chatty House kind of hip this too, that maybe we'll see the starters get a little bit more of a run tomorrow night in San Francisco. And then do you think it escalates closer to maybe a close to full rotation, full game load on Sunday at the Golden One Center Sunday afternoon against Portland, and then maybe it ramps down for that last one before they start preparing for Minnesota a week from Thursday.
I think that makes a ton of sense, and that's, I think, how I would build it if I were Mike or in charge of things. I remember, you remember last year, guys, the Kings and Warriors met for essentially their dress rehearsal games where they played like it was a normal game, and the Warriors beat the Kings. I think Steph Curry hit a buzzer beater that game or something like that.
I was traumatized by that.
Yeah. Apologies for bringing that up, but there's typically one preseason game where it's like, okay, this is the best that you have. But it's same way, like, I know the training camp or the preseason in the NFL change, but week three in the NFL preseason was always like a real game essentially. Yeah. And then week four was nothing.
Right.
So I kind of expect that to be Sunday in Sacramento. I expect to be the Kings' best shot. And that game is very interesting to me because I want to see for a full 48 minutes what the bench rotation looks like. Because I'm operating under the belief, guys, and I don't know about you, like I'm operating under the belief, and this is not through anything I've been told, this is pure speculation on my part, I'm operating under the belief that the Kings are going into the 24th against Minnesota and Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles will not be ready to go. I hope to be pleasantly surprised. I think Jordan McLaughlin will be there. Jordan McLaughlin was working and warming up with the team last night on the floor. Did not play, obviously. He's expected to be reevaluated any day now. So hopefully he'll be ready to go and come back, and that'll certainly help with the guard rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm expecting Huerter and Lyles not to be there and then hoping I'm wrong, especially in the case of Kevin Huerter. So if that's the case, like Isaac Jones, he played well last night. Jalen McDaniels had some good defensive moments, was not good offensively, just like last season. So I'm a little concerned about what the rotation looks like for Sacramento on opening night against a really deep and talented Minnesota Timberwolves team. But to go back and answer your question, D'Lo, yeah, I'm expecting exactly what you laid out, that the Kings will have three-ish quarters of how they normally would play in Golden State, will go full out for Portland, and then the last game, which I think is the Clippers in the Intuit Dome, if I'm not mistaken.
Clippers Intuit Dome, and then I'm missing one, but they finished with the Jazz or something, don't they?
Oh, they have two more after that. Yeah, I would expect those two to be maybe one of the fourth one of those two.
One is the Clippers one, actually, that I think about it.
I don't think there is a where's the Clippers game?
Did I imagine that?
There is a Clippers game.
You guys are
just out here making stuff up.
Well,
they got Portland on Monday.
No.
And then they got Utah on Tuesday, and I think that's it, isn't it?
Clippers on Thursday.
Oh, no, there is a game Thursday. There it is.
I was about to say there's only four games.
So maybe the Trailblazers one won't be the full dress rehearsal, and maybe the Utah one will be. One of those two games, the Portland game or the Utah game, will be like that full on, and then everything else will be kind of chill.
Yeah, games in Utah, they don't deserve.
Fair. I think it should be the Portland game. I agree with you. I think it should be the Portland game. And then the Clippers game, they'll rest everybody.
Well, I think they'll play. I think Mike is going to play him, but that I don't think they'll play more. I think it'll look like last night. Look, that's what I think will happen. It'll be a bit just a little first half run, maybe one little stretch for Malik, maybe two. And then that'll be it. And of course then they'll be a week away from the Minnesota Timberwolves opening up at the Golden One Center.
Yeah, Drew Down is right in the comments. Don't disrespect my people of Utah.
Big hockey fan Matt George now that you know the They got a team out there now.
Big hockey fan.
Flying Matt George out to cover Utah hockey.
Can't wait.
Don't they not have a team name yet? I don't think they have a team name. Season started.
Oh, if they had any balls, they'd call it the Utah hockey team.
That's what they should keep it.
The Utah hockey club.
The Utah Bibles.
Well, I don't know if you want to do that. You mentioned the
Utah Elders. That would be so good. Anyway, sorry.
Isaac Jones, Mason Jones. Then there's Colby Jones out there. I think some people were feeling pretty good about the way Isaac Jones played. Do you think he might have a spot on the final roster?
The best part about being a two-way guy from the team perspective is that you can have him play and suit up for pretty much half the season before you have to worry about conveying him. And when you're kind of beat up early on, now's the time to do it. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some minutes in the first week of the season or so, if the Kings are as banged up as I expect them to be. Once Trey Lyles and Kevin Huerter come back, I don't expect him to get in too much. So, but I liked what he did. I thought he had some good moments, had a couple of blocks. He did airball a corner three and went 0 of 2 from 3, which wasn't great. But I'm not going to judge him based off those two shots when he did a lot more right than he did wrong. If we're going down through the three Joneses too, Mason Jones just decided to use all his fouls, and I appreciate him for that. He had 4 fouls in 7 minutes, my guy. But he had a couple threes, so good for him. And
they didn't want him to go to waste.
And then Colby Jones, I feel bad. Colby Jones does not look good.
No.
And this has been a really disappointing summer for Colby, because I thought he looked good last summer. And then this summer, he had an opportunity as a quote-unquote veteran of Summer League, and he didn't play well at all. And he's getting run in these games, and he doesn't look like an NBA player. He's putting up good numbers in the G League, which is the signs of an NBA player, but there's something about this jump to the NBA that is just holding him back a little bit. So, yeah. Colby, out of the Joneses, Colby's at the bottom.
And what's happening, too, with Colby is people are starting to pass him up on the depth chart. I mean, Devin Carter's here now. I think Boogie Ellis is eyeing his spot, you know, wherever that spot is in the Kings, pantheon of the roster. I feel Boogie Ellis might be passing him up. So, you know, not only is he not playing well, but they're bringing in guys that can kind of take his spot and take his standing.
I'm glad you brought up Boogie Ellis, too. I like Boogie. I like Boogie a lot. There's such a log jam at his position. I don't think he has any shot to really get any kind of consistent playing time, but I love the way he plays. He's a microwave scorer off the bench. Doug Christie loves him. Like, Doug Christie's a big fan of Boogie Ellis, and Boogie is really determined to work hard to prove that he can play on the defensive end of the floor. But Boogie's a bucket, and he comes in and he likes to score the basketball, and he's fun to watch.
I look at him real quick. I look at him as a guy that is a long-term guy, part of your program. I like what I see from him. You may look at him like, I don't know the rules of the contract and stuff like that, but no, he's not going to be with the Kings this year, but we'll have him in Stockton all year. We'll, you know, work on his game, work on some of the stuff that he needs to get ready for. And then maybe next year, when we're going into the season, he's looking like a guy that may be able to be on the big club every now and then. Almost the same path as Keon Ellis. Isn't that how Keon was? Keon, the first year, he wasn't really up here much at all. He was in Stockton a lot, right? His rookie year.
Yeah, he bounced in between, but he never got any run with Stockton last year. Right, so all of his Stockton time was his rookie year, yeah.
Right. So maybe that's how Boogie Ellis, you know, it plays out for him.
That's a good segue, Casey, because Matt, what I was going to ask you about was Keon Ellis and his play last night.
Yeah, I thought Keon did his job. Right. He started the game and he was guarding Steph Curry, and he made Steph Curry's life as difficult as possible. He had a steal or a couple, one steal. Steal. Yeah. He went 1 for 2. Like, that Keon's shooting and scoring with the starting five is going to be spot scoring. And there are going to be games where, like we saw in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors, or the play in against the Golden State Warriors, where he gets a lot of looks because the defense is daring him to beat them. He's going to get that. Last night, he didn't get that. He didn't get those opportunities very much. That didn't mean that he was uninvolved. Didn't he have like 4 assists or something like that too, D'Lo? I don't know if you have the box score in front of you. I don't know.
Yeah, Keon had 4 assists.
So, yeah. I mean, he did his job. And that's what he's supposed to do with those starters. He's supposed to space the floor, score when he gets the opportunity, take the right shot when the ball comes to him in rhythm, move the basketball, play solid defense. That's his job, and he did it. There's nothing about what Keon Ellis did last night that I think was bad. I mean, the perimeter defense as a team could have been better, so you lump him into that. But if Keon goes through games and is relatively unnoticeable, except for when he takes shots and hopefully makes shots, and when he's defending the top guard on the other team from time to time, but he goes through, and then you look at a stat line, and you see those numbers, and you see a steal, and you see assists, it's like, then Keon Ellis is doing his job. He's a good player. And I don't know how he loses that spot.
I agree. We talked about it at length. And then you combine that if he starts and they're playing well, like,
yeah, you're not moving him.
Going to take him out, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wonder what it looks like if Kevin Huerter is doing his job and Keon Ellis is doing his job, whose job winds up being more important. Now, I think that one thing that will be of note is, Matt, kind of what you started this whole conversation with is DeMar got looks, Keegan got looks, Domas got looks, De'Aaron got looks. It helps that Keon doesn't really need looks.
Correct.
Kevin Huerter becomes completely ineffective if he doesn't have looks.
Correct.
Because he's not the defender that Keon is. Yes. So probably another point for Keon in the who starts at two conversation that does not include Malik Monk. Ever.
And once again, yes, Malik still got his seven shots off the bench and he had new money, but he looked like the exact same Malik.
Yeah.
Like, once again, Mike Brown's rotations are De'Aaron Fox was going to be the first guy subbed out of the game. And then Malik Monk was at the table, I think, a little bit longer than expected. So then Mike ended up subbing three guys in and had DeRozan, Fox, and Keon, I think, all subbed out of the game at the same time. But still, Mike's rotation is going to be to get Monk into the game first and have Fox taken out first. To stagger that rotation. One of Fox, DeRozan, or Sabonis was on the floor at all times. And I thought it was interesting that the majority of the time DeRozan was on the floor, Fox was out there with him. I thought that Fox played like a minute and a half or 2 minutes where DeRozan was not out there. That was it. The rest of the time, DeRozan was out there with him. And then Domas played the first 10 minutes of the game. So if with Keon with that starting unit, assuming that's what carries over when Kevin Huerter comes back, hey, here come two guys off the bench in Malik and Kevin that are just flamethrower scorers. And maybe it could work. We haven't seen it. And I'm looking forward to seeing it when Kevin's healthy. Maybe it could work. But I think we know that Keon with this starting lineup works. And the Kings might just go with what they know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.